And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy. How the hell are you?
Hey, Shane, did you catch that game down in Baton Rouge?
If I gotta hear that damn song one more time, Mike, I'm gonna lose it. Oh, what a horrible game. Absolutely horrible.
So I got to ask you, are you selling weeks and weeks now, maybe even months? Never even heard you mention Tennessee basketball, but you're going on about this Final Four that you're going to make it to. are you jumping off that bandwagon, or you still got faith in your Vols can make a deep run in the tournament?
You know, I'm looking at flights. I'm just not buying them just yet, you know? I don't think that I don't know, man. If we keep playing like we're playing right now, I mean, here you got LSU without their stud point guard, and we just can't find a way to win that game. Then maybe I shouldn't invest money into going to a Final Four where they may or may not be there. So I'm just going to hold off for now. Oh, and Doyle, you know, you can he's been blowing me up. Like I said, he had Ollie with Kentucky, and now I got Doyle calling me. So these dang paw heads are coming out, you know, just giving us a rubbing it in. I love it, though. They were cordial about it, but just a constant reminder that Tennessee sucks right now.
Well, Shane, I hope the season makes you happy there, whatever Tennessee does down the stretch. Just hope you don't have the happy ending old Robert Kraft from the Patriots has. I'll tell you that.
What a bizarre news, man. I mean, at first I was like, this can't be true. Robert Kraft, billionaire, and he's at some podunk Jupiter Asian spa paying $50-something to get a tug. I was like, there's just no way. I mean, yeah. A guy.
For anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, I should mention, just backtrack just briefly here. Bombshell on Friday, New England Patriots owner busted in a prostitution ring down in Florida. And I thought the funniest thing I saw out there immediately as soon as this hit, someone, you know, broke the story, and they said this guy's worth $66 billion, something like that, and he's, you know, getting these rubbing tugs that cost $75. I don't know why they had to include how much he's worth, but, you know, I did the quick math there, and that's $54.5 million Hugh Freeze specials there.
Yeah, I just don't understand. As somebody of that magnitude, how do you not have, like, multiple degrees of separation? Like, couldn't he tell Jim, and Jim tells Bill, and Bill lines it up with Fred's girls, you know, and they come up, and then there's like, there's no contact, just the event happens. There's no going to like a freaking Tanger outlet, you know, and getting your, you know, getting your stuff on. I can't believe, I mean, I would love to have seen, I can't wait to see the videos of him coming out, you know what I'm saying, and going in, just like, that's Robert Kraft going into the Asian spa, man. That's the craziest news I've heard in a long time.
Well, I'm going to make a promise to you, Shane, and a promise to the listeners. As soon as I make my first billion, that'll be the last time I go to a rug and tug. I'm going to have the rug and tug lady come to my house. All right, Shane, enough of all that shenanigans. Let's go around the league.
Let's do it.
Now let's go around the league. Around the league.
We haven't decided how we're going to play the guys, so, and I wouldn't tell you if I did, so, you know, I don't mind you asking a question, but I don't need to answer it.
No, I mean, I'll be whistling Rocky Top by the end of the week, all our play. I mean, it's just like, right, I mean, just hear it over and over, and, you know, like every other or every third song, it'll roll through within the crowd noise that you play at practice, so you just get used to it. It's a catchy tune, right? I mean,
this game's going to be a street fight. This game's going to be a street fight. I mean, some of you guys don't know who Kimbo Slice is. Hopefully you do. And you go back to it, man, this isn't a sanctioned fight. This is a street fight. I mean, this is the SEC. So, man, it's time. It's time to put on the hard hat. Lunch bell. Let's get to work.
All right, Shane, starting with the big news of the week. You know, since we slowed down, we only had one podcast last week. We had a bit of a scheduling conflict there, so that's why we didn't have two. But the big story last week, we got to hit on this first. Auburn and Georgia, they're planning, or this is official now, apparently, they're moving their annual series. This is a game that's always mid-November. But for the first time since, I believe, the 40s, maybe the 50s, I'm not sure that exactly, but first time in forever, Shane, this game is moving to October. Now, this won't be for the upcoming season, the 2019 schedule. That's already been set by the SEC, but this is going to be for the 2020 season and beyond, is my understanding. And that what that's going to do is kick that Tennessee-Georgia game back to that November time slot. Mm-hmm. And when this news was made official, Shane, I saw tons of Georgia fans really angry at this. They don't understand why Georgia is essentially doing Auburn a favor. You know, the reason being Auburn does not want to play Georgia and Alabama in a 3-week span, and every other year they have to go, they're hitting both those away. Now they get them both at home the following year, but just brutal to have to go to Georgia, to Alabama. I'll give you my thoughts, but I want to get yours first, Shane. What were your thoughts on that, and do you understand why so many Georgia fans were upset by this news?
No, that's the part that got me. I don't understand. I thought this was more their move. You know what I'm saying? So what is the disadvantage to moving them?
Well, the disadvantage, I think, for Georgia fans, this all stems from when – obviously, the SEC expanded from 12 to 14, and what happened, there was kind of a quirk in the schedule, and Georgia had to travel to Auburn in back-to-back years, and that was never paid back, essentially. So Auburn did not have to go to Athens 2 years in a row. So essentially, since that time, since I guess that would be the 2012 season, I mean, Auburn's kind of gotten one over on Georgia a little bit, I guess you could say, to where they've got to host them, you know, one more time than they should have. So I think there's just bad blood there because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you what, Shane, I truly do not understand why Georgia fans are upset, and I'll tell you why. Yes, I think a lot of them look at this and they say, why in the hell are we helping Auburn? You know, this is one of our rivals. We should do everything we can to make life difficult on them.
Right.
But the truth of the matter, and I'm sure you're going to agree with this, Shane, Georgia's biggest rival now in the SEC is Alabama. I mean, that's everyone's rival in the SEC if they want to win the league. And what this does, if you kick this game back to October-ish, I think you're giving Auburn a little bit more rest. You're giving them more time to prep for that Alabama game, because when you have to face Georgia and then you have to bounce back 2 weeks later and play Alabama, how often is Auburn going to be too beaten up to give Alabama a good fight? And the more losses you can rack up on Alabama, the better that for Georgia. They may not have to face them in the SEC championship game if Alabama were to get beat by Auburn.
So you think, honestly, the team losing the most out of this would be the University of Alabama. Is that what you're saying?
I think so, Shane, because it does make life a little bit easier for Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, what it does, from my understanding, why Georgia wants this done is because in October, this October's time slot, they're going to Tennessee or Vanderbilt, and those are basically their two SEC games in October.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, I don't know, it just creates a lull in their home schedules. So that way they get Auburn, and now they get a big marquee opponent every other year at home in that Auburn time, in that October time slot. So I don't know, it makes sense all the way around. And you got to look at it like this, Shane, in the era of the college football playoff, You know, how many times are teams losing in November and then they're still getting in the college football playoff? It very rarely happens.
Right.
If you lose in September, you lose in October, you got plenty of time to rebuild momentum. And if you're moving one of your toughest games to October, that gives you a chance where, you know, if Auburn does beat Georgia, they still have a month and a half to rebuild that momentum, get hot, get into the SEC championship game, and they will get into the playoff.
So this is a done deal, man, right? This is happening. This isn't something that's proposed. We're going to talk about it at Hoover or anything like that. This is a done deal.
Yeah, it is. It's starting in 2020.
Well, when I first got it, man, I don't know. It kind of rubbed me wrong that just Georgia could say, hey, I want to switch the schedule, and we're going to do that. I mean, as a Tennessee fan for many years, there's a lot of people been wanting to move that Florida Gator game, but we couldn't get it done. So, but when I take a step back and look at it, I think Tennessee came out the biggest winner here. Just the main, you know, because now we won't be playing Florida and then the next week playing Georgia. Mm-hmm. Now we'll have a cupcake team, then Florida, a bye week, then Alabama, and then a cupcake team, and then Georgia. So I think this really benefits the University of Tennessee.
Yeah, we've seen it several years in a row where Tennessee's just getting, you know, a murderer's row. It seems like every year they're just getting Florida, Georgia, their SEC West opponent, and then Alabama. And it's just, I mean, they're lucky to get out of that with one win, you know. So I think you're right there. I think this helps. Obviously, I think they would love to move that Florida game to November too, get the Gators up in the cold weather, or maybe you have to go to Gainesville where it's not hot and humid. But
yeah,
to my understanding, when a move like this is made, both the schools have to request it. The SEC has to agree. So it's not just Georgia saying it. It's not just Auburn saying it. Both these schools had to agree. The SEC had to agree. And I guess there just wasn't enough reason not to want to maneuver this game.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, man. It's going to be interesting because it's a new look. And I don't know, just you kind of got used to the scheduling and you thought it would never change. But here we go. So I kind of like this, that they are open to move some things around. So maybe in the future, if they start looking at maybe restructuring the conference, at least it gives you that impression that they'll at least listen to the idea, you know?
And final note here on Auburn, Shane, Wesley McGriff, he's the former Ole Miss defensive coordinator. He was there a couple of seasons and he got fired immediately after the season. He is coming back to Auburn. He's worked there previously as the defensive backs coach. That's what he's going to be once again. And I like this move here, Shane, for the Tigers, because Wesley McGriff, while not a very good defensive coordinator, Ole Miss defense has been pretty pathetic the last couple years under his watch. He's been known as a very good defensive backs coach. He was the defensive backs coach after Will Muschamp left at Auburn. Their defense actually wasn't that great under Muschamp, but it got significantly better immediately after Muschamp left. This is a guy with NFL experience. He actually has signed a number of five-star prospects during his time in college game. And I don't know, anytime you're getting a guy to be a position coach that has coordinator experience, he's got NFL experience, he's a good recruiter, I think this is a really solid hire here for Gus Malzahn.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I just don't know much about him, so I'm just kind of curious, you know, what transpired to let the old DB coach go, you know? Is this something that Wesley's going to be walking into some sort of buzzsaw that we don't know about, you know? That's the only thing I'm worried about, but I don't know. Sounds like, I mean, he's got a lot of experience, so he should be a good hire.
And they call him a crime dog, Shane, so anytime you get a position coach with a nickname, you know you're getting, you know, someone with a good reputation here.
What's his nickname?
The crime dog.
The crime dog. McGriff. Oh, I get it now. Oh, that's good. All right. I'm with it. Good hire, Auburn.
All right, Shade. Sticking with the theme here, let's kick over to Athens where, you know, we got a little clip here. I just, you know, this is nothing major, but this is just the time of year, Shane. Any kind of clip we can use, we're going to do it. So this was a little clip that was done by, I believe, Athens news report here. And they spoke to receiver Tyler Simmons, and they spoke to Jake Fromm. Just kind of, you know, the big question there in Georgia right now is, what is James Coley's offense going to look like? Go over to this quick clip, and then we'll discuss it.
I feel like there will be a different feel, a little bit more energetic feel to the offense this year. might have the ball in the air a little bit more. Just a little bit more balanced offense, I feel like, this year. And Coley brings a lot of energy to the offense, so we're all really excited.
Is the playbook going to be different? No. It's just probably going to be more added on to it. So super excited, you know, what we got going in. I can't wait to see, you know, what happens during spring. And, man, it really just kind of see, you know, what's going to happen.
All right, Shane. So, I mean, based on that, like I said, not a ton of information there, but I think the key takeaway for me there was Jake Fromm saying, you know, it's not a whole lot is going to change if he's telling the truth. You know, we'll find out here in a few weeks once spring gets kicked off here. But do you think it's a wise decision, whether it's Coley's style or not, to just kind of keep it status quo? Or do you think they really need to mix things up in Athens?
I don't know. I think they need to mix a few things up. I mean, one guy comes out and says it's going to be different, and the other one says Fromm says it's going to be the same, just added to. So I think that's the approach they should take, because what they did last year was successful, you know, adding to it, maybe, you know, getting a little bit more two-dimensional, I think would definitely help this offense. But I don't know. I'm just curious, because there's so many different new weapons on that side of the ball. And, you know, obviously the running backs are there, so you kind of expect them to still lean heavy on the running game.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the biggest thing. I'm not concerned at all with Georgia's defense. I think they're going to be really good on defense next year. They got a ton of young talent that played last year that still haven't seen the best from them yet, but still seen plenty of promising signs from. I expect a lot of those guys to take the next step. And, hell, we all know this is Kirby Smart's defense, and his unit has never failed to disappoint. So I have no concerns about the defense. I want to see what this offense is. Not to say that it's going to be bad or that they're going to ruin it by any means, because I just think they're going to rely on what I think will be the SEC's best offensive line. You know, we love Jake Fromm. He's a great quarterback. And while the names may be new, they're still going to have plenty of weapons on the outside. And DeAndre Swift, if he continues to progress, he may be the SEC's best running back. So I have no concerns about Georgia's offense, but it will be a big question. I shouldn't say big question mark. The question mark, I guess, is a better way to put it. I'm just curious to see what they're going to show next year.
Coley, is there another coordinator in this conference that's going to have more pressure on him than James Coley? I don't think the defense side with Kirby, I just don't think that they're going to be hung out to dry. But if they don't see that improvement, because they got high standards, Mike. The standards are competing in the SEC championship, winning that thing, and making it to a playoff and compete for a national championship. Obviously, that's where they're at right now. And if they fall short of that with a quarterback like Fromm, the running backs that they have, the offensive line, it just seems like there's a lot of pressure on this Coley, and this may be – it feels like it could either be – he could be a hero, and we're talking about him as a head coach somewhere next year, or he's a scapegoat, and he's out of there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think someone like Jim Chaney's got a lot of pressure, but it's different, like you're saying, because Chaney's so experienced that I don't think he will be given time, but the expectations are not quite there, where if they struggle a little bit, even 2 years down the line, I mean, I still think he's pretty comfortable. Whereas if Coley's offense is terrible this year, he could be one and done.
Maybe Sarkisian is as potent as that offense was last year. I mean, if they take a significant step back with Tua, I could see him being hung out to dry. It's just, I don't know. That's a tough job to take, I would think. I mean, you're not going to turn it down if you're Coley, for sure, but it just seems like he's going to have a lot of pressure on him this season.
All right, Shane. Well, let's stick with Alabama there, because we got some stuff to hit on with the Crimson Tide, but I wanted to start with these comments that came out on Friday regarding Mac Wilson, Shane. Obviously, Alabama's a big-time junior linebacker. He surprised many when he announced he was leaving for the NFL. A lot of people thought he would come back for his senior season. He didn't quite live up to the All-American hype that he was getting, but he was an all-SEC player, so he's still a hell of a player. But when Alabama had their press conference they have every year where they announce which guys are going pro early, he was not among the four that were there. Of course, there were three others, and a lot of people read into that saying the three that went beyond that press conference Maybe Saban does not agree with those decisions, and that certainly seems to be the case here with Mac Wilson. And this is according to Alex Byington of the Montgomery Advertiser. He met with Wilson's mom and his mentor, and apparently Saban, you know, he was trying to convince Mac Wilson to come back. He couldn't get Wilson to come back, so he turned to Wilson's mom and his mentor and just tried to get them to convince him that, hey, he needs one more year to get ready for the NFL. And the big quote from this story, this is Saban essentially says, you know, like I just said, he needs one more year. Tell him to come back for one more year and he'll be ready. And Wilson's mentor said, you've had him for 3 years. What are you going to do in a year that you haven't done in three? And he said Nick Saban had no answer for that question. So, I mean, that's kind of a damning comment there. And obviously, you know, we're not trying to diminish Nick Saban or you know, hell, he's the greatest college coach of all time, I think. But I thought this was kind of a miss here for a guy that Alabama will probably miss next season. What are your thoughts on Saban's pitch there and not having a follow-up answer?
Now, you know, the thing about this one, Mike, at first you think of Saban being selfish. Like, this is something he needs for his team. This is going to benefit the University of Alabama. But then I've read up a little bit on Mac Wilson, and a lot of people are projecting him in the second round. So what if Saban's right? Maybe, I mean, another year may not move you up four or five rounds, but it could move you up to a first-round pick. And, I mean, one thing about this draft, there's a lot of linebackers already in it. So maybe that was something that Saban – I mean, Saban looks after these kids. I mean, obviously he's looking after his team, but there may be something – to him coming back for another year and proving that he should be a first rounder.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, there's not a ton of guys Alabama has had that I can recall that came back to school and it like destroyed their stock. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it seems like it almost always helps. I think Damian Harris, I'm not saying he regrets his decision. I think, you know, obviously Alabama didn't win the national championship and that's the goal down there, but I always like to see running backs go pro because they've got such a short lifespan, so I think he should have went last year. But
yeah,
he didn't cost himself, so that may not be even a great example. But you know, I think you make a good point. Mac Wilson may, but everyone's got their reasons. I mean, it says in the story that growing up they didn't have money to eat. So
yeah,
I mean, when you grow up like that and you get a chance to make a couple $1 million, I think more often than not, almost anyone in that situation is going to take it.
Yeah, seriously. You're talking family here. I mean, who knows, Saban, when he was making this pitch, he can see their body language that there was no way in hell he was coming back. So maybe that's why he didn't have a rebuttal.
All right, Shane, sticking with Alabama, I think Crimson Tide fans would be pretty fired up about this, but this was first reported by Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, but Alabama has hired Iowa State analyst Joe Houston, Shane, and we don't talk a lot of analyst talk on here, but this is a big one, Shane, because this guy, he's got another assistant with a nickname, Shane. I'm finding all these nicknames out here for you. This Joe Houston is known as the Kicking Whisperer. And check this out, Shane. So he's had two kickers there at Iowa State. And this guy's a former kicker himself at USC. He inherited two guys that had no kicking experience whatsoever and made them Big 12 performers, back-to-back kickers here for Iowa State. And hell, Shane, I mean, if there's one thing Alabama's their weakness is their kickers. So I think you got to bring in a guy who's a whisperer of kickers, wouldn't you say?
I love it. It's been the running joke. They have everything but a kicker, you know, and special teams is horrible. So I think this is great, man. I mean, one of the biggest things they got during this recruiting class was the number one kicker. So who knows? Maybe they're turning the leaf. They're actually, when you get to that level of Saban, that's your big moves in the offseason is addressing the kicker. You know, you gotta love it.
Last thing I got on Alabama, Shane. They have announced a new home and home. I know you're a big fan of these home and home games,
yeah, buddy.
But they're going to face West Virginia. And that's going to be at West Virginia in 2026. And the return date will be the following season in 2027. And I believe these will both be season openers. So my big question to you, Shane, Will Nick Saban, who's a West Virginia native, will he be at Alabama in 2026-2027?
No, he will be in West Virginia, though, you know, with his family, because that's where he's from. So I'm sure they'll have some sort of halftime thing that they recognize him as being a, you know, just a hometown hero, even though he didn't coach at West Virginia. But, yeah, I don't think so. When you're getting 2027, you know, we talked about this. If I was Saban and I'm going out, I'm not scheduling West Virginia. I'm scheduling Oklahoma, Texas, Ohio States. I want a team that Clemson's, you know, because I want my predecessor to struggle. That's what I want to do. So I'm kind of surprised he went with the West Virginia route. Unless he's playing. I mean, you never know. Saban may be just playing to coach for the rest of his life, and who knows? He may be coaching 7 years, 8 years from now. So, but I don't know. It just seems like that's what I would be doing. Like, nobody's going to top what I did here at Bama. I ain't going to make it easy on them.
So it'll be Alabama head coach Jeremy Pruitt in those games, huh?
That's what I'm afraid of, man. That whole damn staff. Everything they say goes back to Alabama and the stint that they spent time together. So I'm just like, man, I can't have y'all sneaking out in the middle of the night again.
All right, Shane, I know you're a little upset here at LSU. The Tigers beat you on the hardwood there, but we got to kick over to some football news.
Yeah, let's do it.
LSU, Shane, number one recruiting class in the nation right now for 2020 cycle. I know it's early, but I think anytime your team is ranked number one in recruiting, you got to be pretty fired up about that. And of course, you know, the big one here for me, Shane, as soon as I mentioned this, I got this about six times on Twitter. Yeah, but let me know when they get the quarterback. That's what they all say. And one of these guys is actually one of the top quarterback prospects in the nation, Shane. He's got an amazing name. His name is Max Johnson.
Oh, man. That's a quarterback if I've ever heard one.
And I believe that is he's the nephew or the son of, you remember old Brad Johnson in the NFL?
Yeah, absolutely. Played with the Vikings.
I think this is his... I can't remember if it's his son or his nephew or something, but there's a relation there. So, he's going to be pretty solid. And a big thing that stands out to me so far on LSU's recruiting efforts here, Shane, you may think, you know, LSU, the key every year for them is to lock down the state of Louisiana. But here you go, their top prospect, a five-star, he's from California.
Mm-hmm.
They got the top prospect right now in Tennessee locked down. Mm-hmm. They got that Mac Johnson from Georgia. They got a couple guys from Texas. Another guy from California, another one from Alabama. So LSU is doing a really good job right now of course this is early and, you know, none of these guys are signed, so they could all decommit any day now. Yeah. But I just think it's interesting to note that they do have the number one class. And not only that, but they're doing it by casting a wide net, bringing national attention, where LSU's already got national attention. But I think, you know, the big year there for Ed Orgeron and his crew, he came into the year with a lot of heat under him, and that's all gone now. And it looks like it's really paying off on the recruiting trail for the Tigers.
Well, and that was some of his saving grace going in the last season, was the fact that not only last year he had a nice recruiting class, but he'd already had one like that we see here setting up for 2020. So, so they knew that the product may not be great on the field, but at least we've got a bright future with these recruits, and getting rid of Coach O may shake that up. So, but Coach O, say what you want, man. He had a hell of a season last year. You know, there's a couple games I'm sure he'd love to have back, but you got to feel pretty good as an LSU fan, just the fact that he is bringing that talent in.
Mm-hmm. And a final update here with LSU, Shane, Rashard Lawrence, their outstanding defensive lineman, he is going to be out for all of spring. This was just announced, I believe, this weekend here. He's having knee surgery, going to be out for the spring. I think he's going to be out for some of the summer activities too. But from what I understand, he will be full go for fall camp. So he may not need much of that. I believe he's a senior, so it's not like he needs the offseason here. But they're definitely going to need him if they're going to make a run in the SEC. So hopefully he gets fully recovered there in time for the season. That would be a big loss if they didn't have him.
I'll tell you too, man, there's a lot of buzz coming out from that guy they picked up from the Saints, the young guy. I don't know. I was reading an article about him and just how he's kind of letting them cut loose with the wide receivers over there and stuff. So who knows? Maybe we'll see a different style of LSU offense next year.
All right, Shane, let's kick it over to your squad here. Go to Knoxville where Jeremy Pruitt and Rick Barnes, they did a little video here. I thought this was, you know, pretty neat. But like I said, kind of like with that Georgia video, there's just not a ton of content out here. So any kind of glimpse we get into these programs, we got to use what they give us at this time. And I thought some of these comments were pretty interesting. So let's just play this full clip. It's not that long. It's this is Jeremy Pruitt talking with the Tennessee basketball coach Rick Barnes, and he's talking about, you know, year two of his conditioning program and looking ahead to spring football. So let's kick it over to Jeremy Pruitt.
Well, first of all, thanks for being here with me, and you're a year into it. Talk to me. Tell me how it's going.
Well, you know, after being here for 12 months, the second time around has been a lot smoother. I think our guys that are coming back that's been here a year have really kind of bought in, and you can see kind of the positive impact they're having on their teammates and even the new freshmen that are coming in. And you can already see these guys are, you know, in the weight room, how they go out in conditioning. They all came from winning programs. So I think sometimes it gets contagious out there when they start competing. So I think there's a good mix.
Every year you can lose some guys, but now with the staff that you have coming in, you feel real good about that?
Yeah, you know, we added Jim Chaney. Jim's been doing it in this league a very long time. We added T. Martin, who I don't think anybody out there could sell the University of Tennessee better than T. And then we just added Derek Ansley. I worked with Derek at two stints at Alabama, and the guy's a phenomenal teacher.
Tell me about the spring game. Anything different going to be about that?
Number one, we want to fill up the stands. The best recruiting piece you got is your fans, a tradition, expectations, and you know, we're kind of looking forward to a full game where we can compete and see what we got.
Well, we expect everybody to be there. Appreciate you being with
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
Appreciate you. Thanks. Yeah.
All right, Shane, this is I think the second time in a few weeks here we're talking about Jeremy Pruitt asking for fans to show up and support the team for the spring game, and he understands how important that is. But what was your biggest takeaway from this little clip here from Jeremy Pruitt?
That we're 0-1 since this came out, you know, that maybe Pruitt should have been saying, hey, won't you feed Schofield a little more and don't let Turner shoot a three at the end of the game? So, I mean, that's the first thing that crossed my mind, Mike. But all jokes aside, I love seeing these two together, especially also with Phil Fulmer. I just think they're the three cool dudes I'd like to hang out with. And I bet they got stories for – I mean, this – that's just what they come across as. They could tell you stories all night long about basketball games, football games. It don't matter. But I don't know. I really think that we need to get pumped up. But it's a different type of feeling, you know. Like when Butch came in, and I hate talking about Butch, but when he came in, especially going into that 2016 season, mm-hmm. You know, there was a lot of hype coming in. A lot of people are getting pumped up. And I don't know. That's one thing he did. He came out with those stupid mottos, which we got really sick of. But at that time, we weren't. And it got people pumped up. Pruitt's just saying, you need to be there. You know, yeah, you're expected to be there. If you want this team to do good, you need to be there. So he's got a different type of attitude. So I don't know how that's going to come across to the fans. I don't think they're going to, you know, just beat down the door Saturday night to watch the orange and white game. But I do hope that a little more buzz comes out, you know, closer to spring, and maybe we do get a good showing because there's going to be recruits there, you know.
Final thing I got on Tennessee here, Shane. This was first reported by Bruce Feldman. I have since confirmed the story, but the analyst there for the Tennessee, Joe Osovet, this is the former junior college head coach that they got to come to Knoxville last season to be an analyst there. He has been promoted after only 1 year on the job, and he is now Tennessee's top analyst. So basically, I think they really wanted to promote this guy. They just didn't have a spot for him on staff, but I think he's next in line if someone were to leave, potentially getting bumped up to the full-time staff. And I'm told, Shane, that he had many opportunities to go be a on-the-field coach at the G5 level, but he wanted to stay here in Knoxville. He wants to work with Pruitt. He wants to get on the field at Tennessee. And this is a guy that a lot of fans are, you know, not too familiar with, but from what I understand, he has been an animal in the recruiting world. He's helped him get a number of guys in the previous two classes there, and he just, their four-star defensive tackle, he was the key recruiter, and you're talking about an analyst being a key recruiter here. So thoughts on Joe Osavet, a guy who we kind of flirted with maybe being the next offensive coordinator. Of course, that didn't happen, but just what are your thoughts on Tennessee, you know, putting in the investment to make sure that even the analysts don't leave the program?
Yeah, no, that's great, man, because there was a lot of talk, even like you said, when we're looking for an offensive coordinator, that this may be the guy. You know, he's an innovator. He's, you know, he's got a bright future. And the fact we're able to keep him and he's recruiting and helping the university, but not even, you know, that 10-man staff, mm-hmm. That's huge, man. That's a support system that you want. And because say what you want, I mean, we just every year we lose three or four coaches. You know, if you're Alabama, you lose seven coaches. So, yeah, you always got to have a next man up. And it's really, I don't know, it just seems like schools do better when they can just streamline, when they can promote from within, mm-hmm. and to have him come in and remain that, you know, keep that continuity, I think is huge. So that's a good get, man.
Yeah, this guy's offense was averaging over 40 points per game. Five times they scored 75 or more. So this guy clearly knows what he's doing when it comes to offense.
I hope they let him run scout offense sometimes, you know, just to keep Pruitt on his toes.
All right, Shane, let's jump over to Lexington. So we've got some news here for Kentucky. They have officially promoted Brad White, who is the outside linebackers coach. He is the new defensive coordinator there in Lexington, Shane. And of course, you know, he's filling in for Matt House, who left Lexington to go be the linebackers coach there for the Kansas City Chiefs. And this is an interesting move here, Shane. I think this was expected. I think it was Josh Edwards of 24/7 Sports had reported this a couple days ago that this was going to happen, and that turned out to be the case. But why I think this is so interesting, Shane, basically following the Matt House route here, where he came on staff last year as a position coach, knocked it out of the park as a position coach, and now he's elevated to defensive coordinator. And this was mm-hmm. Josh Allen's position coach. We all know who that is. You know, for my money, I think he was the most outstanding player in the SEC last year, just basically at times put that defense on his back. And Cash Daniel, our boy Cash Daniel, as soon as this move was made, I mean, he took to Twitter to celebrate. So this guy clearly has the players' respect. And I think this is the next best thing to keeping Matt House, Shane, is to once again promoting from within there at Kentucky, because with all the turnover they're going to have on that defensive side of the ball, I just don't think it would have been wise for this developmental program to just kind of bring in someone completely unfamiliar with the players or the system or Mark Stoops and having to just totally rebuild this defense.
Yeah, no, I agree. This is something we kind of saw coming. So I think the team's bought in, and that's, I mean, ultimately that's what matters. These players coming out and talking about how great a coach he is. So if they can just keep that going, I mean, this was a hell of a defense last year. And if there's no drop next year with that schedule, I think, man, Kentucky's in for another good run, man.
Yeah, and Mark Stoops also finalized his staff because he stole Ole Miss linebacker coach John Summerall, and that's a name Kentucky fans should be familiar with because he was a linebacker himself there at Kentucky, I think going back about 10 years or so. So he's relatively new in his SEC coaching career, but from what I understand, he was one of Ole Miss's best recruiters of that position. He was the one that remember old Lakia Henry, he was a Tennessee commit. Then a lot of people thought he was going to go to Arkansas, the nation's number one junior college linebacker. He was the key recruiter for that guy to come to Ole Miss. So Kentucky bringing home a homeboy who knows how to recruit. I think that's another solid hire there for Mark Stoops.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Shane, let's kick it over to Vanderbilt, where a little bit of news came out of Nashville this week, where Derek Mason has landed a contract extension. Of course, because Vanderbilt is a private institution, they do not have...
Did you say hair extension?
Contract Sorry. Extension there. Because Vanderbilt is a private institution, Shane, they do not have to reveal, you know, length of the contracts or anything about the contract. So we don't even really know how much Derek Mason is getting paid for how long. But I believe he had 2 years left on his deal. And from what I'm told, he's getting two more. So this is, he's essentially got a 4-year deal now from what I'm told. What are your thoughts on that one, Shane? Because Derek Mason, I don't know, he's an interesting one because I do think he's a quality coach, Shane, but he's been there 5 years. Mm-hmm. He's yet to have a winning season. But at the same time, he's 3-2 against Tennessee. And I think if you're a Vanderbilt fan, obviously you want to have a winning record. But beating Tennessee, I think that may be more important than having a winning record.
Well, let me ask you this. So how do we know how many years he has now? Did you say that?
From what I'm told, he's got four, but okay. They do not reveal any of the information.
But that's like the running number. I mean, you always, mm-hmm. you kind of want your head coach to have 4-year contract because if not, if they are in any type of recruiting battle, they're just going to use it against him. Say, hey, listen, Mason ain't even going to be there 4 years from now. Look, his contract ends in 2 years. You know, it's just, this is something you have to do. So even if they do let him go later in life, they'll just eat the contract. So this does not really surprise me just because of that. But I wouldn't get my hopes up if I was in the Mason family just with this new regime coming in. It seems like, you know, they're expecting more. Beating Tennessee was great, yes, but Tennessee's been really bad. And there's been a lot of times they should have had better seasons than they did with the talent that they had. I mean, say what you want. They had a hell of a running back. They've had great wide receivers, tight ends, mm-hmm. Quarterback, Shermer. So I think there was potential to have better seasons, and Mason didn't capitalize on it. So, yeah, like I said, I'm not raising my eyebrows too much on this one.
Sounds like Shane is got some angst there against old Mason. I wonder why.
Oh, it's been a tough weekend, Mike.
A final thing here with Vanderbilt, Shane. They landed yet another grad transfer. This is actually their fifth grad transfer they've landed this year. So they're going to be getting some boosts here from that avenue. But they got Illinois defensive back Cameron Watkins. This guy is, you know, not a scrub, but not. He got 98 tackles, 9 pass breakups, and 1 interception in his career. So this is an experienced player. And, you know, I think anytime Vanderbilt can get these guys, and he's also a Nashville native from what I understand. So anytime you can get immediate help there for, you know, a guy with experience in the Big Ten, I think that's a big plus there for Vanderbilt.
Yeah, definitely, man.
All right, Shane, final thing I got here on the news side here, Arkansas, their new defensive line coach, Kenny Ingram. Actually, I believe he's going to be a defensive tackles coach. He met with the media for the first time since becoming an Arkansas position coach. This is the guy they got off Auburn's staff. But we hit on it, Shane. As soon as this guy was hired, we said, you know, this is a big one because his ties to Memphis, he's going to be instrumental in the Razorbacks trying to get into that city. It's a one with a ton of talent, particularly a ton of linemen this cycle. So, and believe it or not, Shay, that was about the second question he got after what was your name? So here's a clip from old Kenny Ingram talking about what kind of coach he is, and then he follows that up immediately with how he's going to recruit Memphis.
I mean, what kind of coach are you out there on the field?
Listen, I'm a passionate coach, and that's the best way I can say it. I'm very passionate about what I do. I'm very passionate about helping young men be the best that they can be, about pouring into their lives. So the best thing I can say, I'm passionate, very passionate.
You said you're proud to be from Memphis. I mean, that's a fertile recruiting ground that you can bring some experience with. How much are you looking forward to trying to get guys to come to Arkansas from that area?
I mean, it's huge for me. It's huge for me because, one, I'm proud of it because it's paid dividends in my life. Who I am, whatever I will be, it's because of where I've come from, and I come from Memphis, and I'm proud to one, be able to model, man, having success as a kid from Memphis, as a person or a young man from Memphis, and I want to be able to share that with other young men. So I'm definitely looking forward to being able to do that here.
All right, Shane, so we knew this one was coming, and he got asked it right away. I thought he came away with a pretty, solid answer to this question. But what do you think about old Kenny Ingram after getting to hear him for the first time?
I like him, man. Don't be surprised if this name doesn't pop up on some 24/7 boards just because the presence he has. You know, sometimes when you listen to coaches, you kind of get lost, you know. Mm-hmm. You're about to talk about John Chavis. John Chavis is one of those. I love the Chief, but sometimes I drift. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes these guys go. Kenny embraces you. I mean, you cannot stop watching him. And if you get a chance, pull him up on YouTube, watch a few clips of him. I think he's going to do well in the living rooms in Memphis, you know, and around the country. I think this is a huge recruiting tool that Arkansas has, and I think they're going to take full advantage of it.
Well, speaking of the Chief, Shane, I'm glad you downplayed him right before we're going to play a clip of him. But John Chavis was asked about just how damn tough last season was. He had to have been the worst, you know, professional season of his life. The team went 2-10, and you know, the defense wasn't that good. I thought they were basically the strength of the team, but that wasn't saying much because Arkansas was the worst team in the SEC. But here's John Chavis admitting that he was humbled last season.
Well, it happens sometimes, and I didn't really allow myself to get frustrated, but I did get humbled, and in doing that. You know, it helps you reevaluate, and it helps you get ready and hopefully motivated to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And that's all you can do. You can't do anything about it. And again, you know, if you get frustrated, then I don't think you're going to be productive. But yes, I was humble, and you know, it's time to go make it better, and that's what we're here for.
All right, Shane, I thought this was a pretty good answer here because, I mean, he's being honest. He's being upfront. And
who is this again?
John Chavis.
Just here. Kidding. No. I'm just kidding. I love him.
Now, I don't know if this stat holds true. I need to study it more, but I do recall last season this was something I looked up and I said here on the podcast, but John Chavis had more experience as a defensive coordinator than the other 13 defensive coordinators combined. I would wager that's still the case because we got a couple first-year guys this year. But, you know, this guy is just so damned experienced. Never experienced anything quite like this. Mm-hmm. I think he is the perfect approach. I mean, I think this is why Chad Morris got him on his staff because while things went terrible last year, it just never... While you saw it on the field, I mean, you just know John Chavis is not a guy that's going to damn blow up on the sidelines and yeah, make a terrible situation even worse, you know?
And his ass wasn't wearing sweats either, I guarantee you. You know? Chavis has had that full gear on the entire time because he's earned it. So this is a guy, I mean, you know, he's been around the league forever. He's seen everything. And he's been at the bottom. He's been at the top. So... he's just a huge tool, especially with that young staff. I think Chavis does more for Arkansas than people realize. Just, you know, just being there as a constant mentor. So I love the Chief. I hope that the defense does a little bit better this year. Actually, a lot better. You know, there were some games that we saw last year that was just inexcusable. And Chief came out and said it. So we were afraid he wasn't going to show back up, and this season it sounds like he's bought back in, so I'm hoping that he puts a good product on the field.
Yeah, and I'm just, you know, I've said it many times, I'll continue to say it, I'm a big believer in, I think the players matter more than the coaches. Mm-hmm. That's not to say these coaches don't matter, surely they do, but, you know, I don't care how good of a coach you are, if you don't have any good players... I shouldn't say any good players, but you don't have enough good players, you don't have quality depth, it's just not going to happen on the field. So Arkansas is just in that tough spot where they need to build it up. They did a hell of a job in recruiting the first year, and they need to keep doing that. And I think, at least on the defensive side of the ball, I've got confidence in Chavis getting it done for the Razorbacks.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Shane, that's all I've got. I think we got some mailbag to get to.
Well,
don't we?
For then, let's don't ignore the Mississippi State kicker here, man. Just got busted for a DUI. Oh. Leaving his bright lights on. Did you hear that?
Oh yeah, he doinked that one, didn't he?
Well, I was hoping that it. Of course, I hope I shouldn't say hope. That's horrible. But I, at least if you're a Mississippi State fan, it was for bright lights. It wasn't for like a wide right turn, you know, or he didn't stay between, you know, the lines or navigational beacons. So, I mean, there is positive there. He just likes to shine, you know. So, oh, man, his Bud Light's kicking in, Mike.
Let's get to the mailbag.
Yeah, let's do mailbag.
Listen up. It's time for mail call.
Don't have to answer that question.
I'll answer the question. You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
My turn. What do you got?
Okay, here we go. What color is a fire truck?
Oh, God, I always get these. All right, fire truck. Fire truck. What color are those red fire trucks?
All right, Shane, what we got first?
All right, first question. This comes from our Reddit page. And again, we've got a few of you on there, and I appreciate it. I'd like for us to get a little more interactive, especially when football kicks around. And if you want to find us, you can get us at That SEC Podcast. This one comes from Willie Beeman. It's UGA. Where are the receivers at? When I went to school there, we had great receivers. Edwards, Massaquoi, A.J. Green. We also had tight ends like Pope and Big Ben Watson. Where are they now? The Clemson kid in the championship game was a freshman and looked better than all of our guys combined. P.S. You guys rock and are perfect balance. Quit smoking and keep drinking, Shane. It's good for the economy. that's a great question, man. I'm curious because I think that this wide receiver core could be special. It's going to be young. We got those transfers coming in from Miami. I think that's exciting, especially that big-bodied one. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about the tight end situation because, honestly, Nada.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for sure he was going to be a stud. I remember the Hail Mary game. I'm watching him. It seems like he was just catching everything. And come to find out, they're projecting him as the fourth best tight end in this draft. But he had less than 1,000 yards. And I thought in a Jim Chaney system, he would have got more involved. So I'm kind of curious, man. Who do you think is going to be the safety blanket for the next year?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think it's going to be J.J. Holloman. I think he really started to emerge. Of course, he's a receiver, but you know they're going to really need someone to step up there. And I just seem like down the stretch, that was kind of one of Jake Fromm's go-to guys. And he's kind of progressed, I don't want to say slowly, but he never really made the impact that some were calling for early in his career. I think the light came on for him last season. And there were just so many guys to throw the ball to. You know, he doesn't have terrific stats, but I think next year he will.
Mm-hmm.
But I responded to this on our Reddit page. I don't really think you're going to see the class of receivers this guy is talking about, how they were back in the day, at least not next season, Shane. It's kind of like the same thing I was talking about already with Coley. I got this offensive line that's just going to be able to run all over people. Mm-hmm. They've got DeAndre Swift. They got all these back. I mean, they've got a stable of running backs. They don't even have to run Swift. You know what I mean? He could be more of a slot guy. And I mean, of course, he is going to run the ball, but they won't have to run him 30 times a game. They may only have to run him 15 times a game, keep him fresh all year, because they'll have so many backs. They got Jake Fromm is one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. I think Georgia's play action is going to be so lethal next year, but I don't think they're going to put up a ton of passing yards. I think they'll be very balanced, but just there's really no need to force feed one guy just because I think that running game is going to be so good. And I think that's the key to winning in the SEC anyway. So while you may not have any of these all-American type receivers, guys that are, you know, locks to be first round picks immediately, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing for Georgia.
I do think that we're going to see a little bit more passing to the running backs. In fact, I think we're going to see a lot more of that,
mm-hmm.
kind of like that Kamara or Darren Sproles kind of top play out of the backfield. Because if you remember, there was a couple of games, especially against Alabama, it had real potential, and that's what kept them on their heels. So Don't be surprised if you see a little bit more from the a little more receiving from the running back. So
yeah, that wheel route's always open.
Dude, it is, man. It's like money. And then as soon as you get everything tied up, they do some sort of draw, and they're 8 yards down the field. So they've got a lot of weapons there. But I am curious about the young receivers, and I'm with you. They're young. So it's probably going to take a season or two to develop and find out who your stud is. But every now and then you get one player. Like if you remember Julio Jones when he came into the league, it was year one. You knew what you had. So I'm really curious about this kid that they stole from Auburn. You know, what's he going to look like season one? Because he's already built like a stud, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, old George Pickens, if he can get into school, which that's kind of the big question mark with him, he could be that next one for Georgia.
Oh, he'll be there. They'll find a way, Mike. If they can helicopter to his class, you know, they can get him. They can get him to class, man. So the next one comes from Jackson Vall on Twitter. You can follow him at fshelton1300. Asked a really interesting question. It kind of got us sideways. He asked, you should do a piece on the next podcast about the most successful famous walk-ons in modern SEC history. Can't think of one name. And the key, I mean, the first thing I thought of, Mike, I don't know if you had any on your mind, but he said modern. And so I kind of wanted to rule out, what's his name from
Rudy?
Arkansas. No, not Rudy. This is SEC, man. He sounded like my brother.
Brian Bolesworth, is who you're talking about?
Yeah. Oh, goggles, man. Him and first thing I thought of was him and Hot Rod, man. I don't know if it was the glasses or what, but those are two studs, man, that just
walked on.
Yeah, well, you think that, but I mean, you would never have said that to Boz if he was in front of you, I guarantee you.
Well, Shad, I believe they've named the...
Burlesworth, that was Burlesworth, yeah, Brandon Burlesworth.
Yeah, the best player that was a former walk-on that's just now, like, basically an All-American.
Yeah.
That is the Burlesworth Trophy, so, I mean, he's the ultimate answer. But I know we were spitballing a couple amongst ourselves. You came up with a pretty good list. Who were some of the other guys you had there?
Well, obviously Kevin Green at Auburn, but I don't know because that's not recent, so you may go Will Hastings, something like that. Rashad Johnson from Bama, obviously, is a good one. Or Dawson Knox at Ole Miss is another stud. I love the future Kelly Washington. His situation was a little bit different. He came from baseball, you know, but he was technically a walk-on and went to the NFL, so he was a good one. Nick Reveas. I'm trying to think of Trevor Daniel. Of course, I'm doing all Tennessee. I probably should move on. what's his name? South Carolina, Hurst.
Hayden Hurst.
Yeah, so there's one right there. I mean, ultimate stud. He hasn't done great for the Ravens yet, but – I really think that he's got a bright future in the NFL.
How about Colin Gillespie there for Texas A&M? I mean, the 12th man went wild when he scored his touchdown. He deserved that one. So I thought that was pretty damn awesome.
Wasn't targeting Mike. let's see. I think there's some other ones, some other names that popped up on the list. Chris Doering from University of Florida. That was one that I saw popped up.
Mark Wahlberg, you remember that?
What? Like the actor?
You never seen Invincible?
No. What is that? Is that like the Eagles?
Yeah.
I did see that one. Yeah. That's what I want to see, man. I want to see the ultimate tryout. I want to, you know, because every university has these tryouts. That's what I want to see. I don't want to see a preferred walk-on or somebody gets the blue shirt or gray shirt or pink shirt, whatever they're giving them these days. Mm-hmm. I want to see some Joe Blow that's 38 years old just come on the field, still smoking on the sideline and just kill it. So, not me, you know, because I'm a little younger than that, but not by much.
Well, we basically saw it from that Miami punter, didn't we? I guess he's on scholarship, though.
Yeah, he's on scholarship because he made him. You know?
He's off parole. He's on scholarship.
That's right. You ain't telling that man now. As soon as he passed the background check, he's in. So, But that's all I got, man. Great questions. And again, it's the off season, so feel free to shoot us some questions there on the Reddit page or on Twitter or whatever, you know. One thing about the schedule we kind of talked about, I was out of town. I was in Louisville last week. Me and
Patino?
The pizza guy. Yeah. Yeah, now he's got some free time, so we went out to eat. He's good, you know. We rode around on the bike and stuff. But anyway, I'll be out in Raleigh this week, and then I got to go all the way down to New Orleans, hang out with Coach O week after this. So I know for sure we can get one out on the Mondays, so because I usually head out on a Tuesday. But hopefully when I'm down there, we can throw out another one, especially if something big happens. So just kind of hang loose these next few weeks. Sorry, I got bills to pay, so I got to do this. So, but other than that, Mike, that is all I've got.
I mean, there's a good show. We went a little long. I actually have done a ton of research, Shane. I was going to do it on this podcast, but I'll save it for the next one. I'll tease it a little bit here, but I've done a deep dive now that all the coaching staffs for 2019, we know who all 10 assistants are for every team. Mm-hmm. I went back and I looked at every single one of them and their recruiting history. I've compiled all that data. So it's some pretty interesting stuff. But like I said, it's going to take a little while to get through. So we'll save that for the next one. Be a good topic because it's kind of slow right now. But we will get to that in the next one. I think all SEC fans will enjoy this this research that I've done. But beyond that, thanks for joining me, Shane. I appreciate it. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening in. We really appreciate it. Rate and review on iTunes if you've not done that. And if not, if you've already done that, we appreciate that as well. Just spread the word. Anyone you can think that might want to listen to this podcast and enjoy it, share it with them, and it really helps us out. And, yeah. You know, the more we can spread this thing, maybe one day we can damn quit our jobs and just do this.
And get better at it. No, I did see a lot of love on Twitter, a lot of retweets and stuff of the show. And one of our boys went out and recruited an Arkansas player. I thought that was cool, you know. So I appreciate y'all spreading the word. And like I said, it's the off season. We love talking football. We love hanging out. So just leave a review if you can. If not, just fuck it. No, I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that. I'm trying to cut down the F-bombs, Mike. I better just hang it up. All right. See you guys. Go Vols.